Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with producer Guy, episode number 96.
Getting closer.
We are getting close to 100. Just on that point, very quickly, before we introduce our wonderful guest today, for the 100th episode, we're doing it live. We have sold out the Lowry Theatre.
Congrats.
Congratulations. We've sold it out. Cannot believe it. Thanks for all your support. 450 tickets sold like that. So looking forward to everyone that's coming on the 9th of October. If you got tickets, great. Welcome. We can't wait to see you. We'll definitely be sticking around for a few drinks afterwards. If you didn't, unfortunately, I'm sure we may do more live episodes in the future.
And the audio version will be live on Apple for you all to listen to. And there'll be a cool behind-the-scenes video coming to this channel very, very soon.
Yeah, so I think you're going to get really look forward to that. So we've got a lot of planning to go ahead, but we are excited. And again, thanks for all your support. And all the profits will be going to a charity that's announced on the night. Our guest today is somebody who I've been a big fan of even before I met her. Mm-hmm. I was lucky enough to bump into her one time at the driving range. And since that, it's been a pleasure to call her my friend. Today, we have Carly Booth on the podcast. Carly, thanks for being on the podcast.
Pleasure to be here, Rick.
I'm excited.
Having me.
Oh, no, it's great. Thank you for coming on. It's funny because we've scheduled a 2-hour window for this podcast, and you're saying we might only just scratch the surface. So we're going to try and cover as much as we can. But first off, I think it's a really nice opening. How would you describe yourself? You bump into someone in the street, go, "Oh, hi, nice to meet you. What's your name and what do you do?"
Well, that's a funny one because some people take it seriously and some people don't.
Take your job serious.
Well, they just don't believe I'm a professional golfer. If I'm just walking and just say, hi, I'm Carly Booth. I play golf for a living. No, seriously, what do you?
Is that what you get? Is that response you get?
Seriously, what do you?
And you go, no, I am. And I've won.
Yeah, I play golf.
I'm pretty good.
Nah. I got friends that play golf.
So they don't believe you?
Never.
Do you ever make a different job title up? Just because you're bored of saying
professional golfer.
No, I know
people that do this, but I just don't have the balls to do it, to be honest.
You're like a dolphin trainer or something like that.
I thought about saying, I'm an astronaut or, I'm a rally driver. If I wasn't a golfer, I'd always want to be something in some adrenaline kind of sport.
You could have been a gymnast, right?
Well, yeah, I could have, but my career would have ended a long time ago.
I would have definitely broke my neck if I tried to do gymnastics. I want to fire things off. Guy, you've got some quick fire questions for Carly.
Yeah, we've not done this for a while, Carly, but sometimes when I have a guest on, we've got 8 or 9 kind of either or questions. So you can either just shoot off the bat and just say the answer straight away, or if you want to elaborate, that's also cool. So the first one, 9 holes or the driving range?
9 holes, 100%.
More fun?
Well, that's how I used to play growing up. I'd play 9 holes with 2-3 balls. And I'd actually, literally this is something I really did do when I was a kid. I'd have 3 golf balls because I can drive. I was so young. So dad would just drop me off at the golf course. There you go. I'll pick you up in 3 hours before mobile phones or anything. So I'd play me against Annika Sorensen and Tiger Woods.
That's class.
So that's what I would do.
Who used to win?
Well,
you always won.
I mean, I'd hope I'd always win, but sometimes it actually wasn't the case, but I'd always tell myself I was the winner.
That's a good way of doing it.
I think I might know the answer to this one before I even ask it after what you said to Rick off camera before, but Netflix or YouTube?
Definitely.
I know it hurts. And are you a drama person, a series person, or films?
I'm more of a series.
Yeah, I am, to be honest.
Again, this one I think has been answered by what you've just said there, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Tiger or Jack Nicklaus?
I think Tiger, because that's who I grew up watching and that's who I kind of looked up to. Jack Nicklaus is a little bit of an era before, but still an absolute legend.
Have you had a chance to meet Jack or Tiger?
Neither.
Oh, that felt like you'd have rubbed shoulders.
Well, I mean, he did, like, Tiger did wave at me once at the Ryder Cup, but that was about it.
When you were...
And then I did watch him win at Augusta live at...
2019.
Pretty amazing.
Did you? Yeah. Oh, my. Were you just as a spectator or were you working?
I had an event of just hosting people. So someone that you guys might know, Bob Mannery.
Oh, yeah.
So we had a really great group of people, a fun week, but it was just amazing to see
Tiger. You were with Bob?
Yeah, I was with Bob. Well, not literally with Bob, but, you know, hosting
him. He is a character.
Absolute legend.
He's actually just currently got the number one podcast.
I was listening to that literally on the way here this morning.
If you don't know Bob Mannery,
so funny.
It's a definite over 18 warning is needed.
But listen to our podcast content first, of course. Listen to his.
Of course.
Driving or putting?
Well, I think, you know, I like to drive. It's always been something that I've always been quite a long hitter and something I'm more of the stronger parts of my game. But putting is definitely where I've struggled and I know that's where the money is made. So it's something I'm constantly working on.
But you'd probably choose driving.
That's more fun.
Do you think then, there's obviously a big debate, certainly in both men's and women's game, but how important distance is now? Do you think it is as important as what we're getting told it is? Or do you still, like you said, then you think it's all about putting and literally getting the ball in the hole?
I think on the PGA, like, they're hitting it so far. Like, it's almost a joke in a sense. But, you know, it's consistency, accuracy, and getting the ball in the hole. So, I mean, always comes down to putting.
Do you think if you can drive it, obviously you're a phenomenal driver of the golf ball, you almost don't consider that as much of a strength because you can already do it almost, and therefore you see putting as something that you definitely need to improve on?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we can always be better at every aspect of our game. It's a sport that you're consistently trying to get better. Even the best are still trying to get better. But the likes of even watching the British Open, like, Bryson hits it so far, but he's hitting it in the rough. Even though he's closer, it's no advantage. Because you'd rather be shorter on the fairway, and then you have a better, like, attempt to get closer to the pin, because coming out the rough, you can't control it the same.
That's true.
Think fairways are just our key thing. I mean, we can all hit it far enough.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like whether that 20 extra yards is really worth it sometimes.
You're a long hitter, aren't you? I feel like you are from the videos I've seen with Rick as well. You can get it out there.
Yeah.
How's your... Do you know your average carry?
It used to be a lot longer than now because I've obviously had a shoulder operation, but it used to be about a 260 carry.
Wow.
Not as much now, but...
Where would that rank you on the LET, 260 carry?
I was always top kind of five-ish, top really? 10, yeah.
Wow.
But now, like, obviously, this is my first season back from my operation, so it's a little bit different. But yeah, driving was always one of my strongest.
Mm. Okay, last of these little questions then. First app you open in the morning?
Usually WhatsApp, to be fair. Then probably Instagram, then my emails.
And then it's like back to WhatsApp, Insta. That's my routine. It's like, what app do you open? Well, I open WhatsApp first, and it's like round in a circle
it's
forever.
It's usually what's there when I wake up and see what I need to answer. Or
what notification?
Are you on your phone a lot? Like Rick, literally as we speak on this, like Rick's horrendous.
I'm literally just checking. I'm not even checking anything.
Rick's just checking his Apple Pay still works.
Do you know what? It's just a habit everyone gets into.
Yeah.
And especially like as someone that travels so much and you're generally on your own, like you go to your phone because that's where your friends are. That's where everything's happening. And, you know, unless you're watching Netflix or YouTube, you're usually chatting to people or FaceTiming or speaking with family or friends.
I feel like you don't even have a do you even have a YouTube account?
I think I tried to start one like 2 years ago and I didn't really get very far.
I think YouTube's one of those things that, like, I honestly watch so much YouTube, not even golf related, just all sorts. I think you're either in that world or you're not.
I agree.
I know some like American YouTubers and stuff who I deem as like unbelievable celebrities, whereas like my wife would have a clue they are. And it's like you either live in that world or you just don't have any interest.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And there's a few crossovers now we're starting to see with YouTubers becoming a bit more mainstreamed. Like, have you heard of KSI?
No.
He's kind of the musician. He's doing a lot more music stuff now. He did a bit of boxing. Surprises me, actually, because he's gone from YouTuber to kind of like much more mainstream celeb. Not heard of him. Need to get out more, Carly. I bet you've danced to his tunes.
No, I have not. Oh, I've not danced in ages.
That's true.
Obviously, COVID.
You do like dancing, though.
I love dancing.
You're a good dancer.
I'm pretty good. Just don't... Have you been working on your singing skills since my golf day?
Oh, my God. Right.
So, come on, let's hear this.
No. I must admit, I hated this. So
I did embarrass him a little bit.
I feel like it was 4 years ago or three.
It was 2018.
3 years ago. Mm-hmm. The famous 2018.
Yeah, that Rick had a good year in 2018, which we'll come on to after maybe.
It was August.
Until he sang.
Yeah, well, all downhill.
Back end of August, and Carly said, I'm running a golf day. Would you love to attend? I'd love to attend. It was one of my favourite golf courses.
I think Stockport. I actually remember you going to this.
Stockport Golf Club, one of my favourite golf courses. Had a wonderful day. Played with Lee Sharp, who's a Man United legend. Really enjoyed it. And afterwards, we had a nice little kind of... like, not gala dinner, it was quite relaxed.
It was a small gathering, more so.
But everyone was suited and booted, right? And
Carly, you on the Guinness?
I was on the Guinness. Carly had put some great entertainment on.
We had, like, Paddy McGuinness there, like, some really good people. And, of course, my legendary brother, Paul.
Yeah. So, Cole Page, who's a singer, who is Mason Page's dad. You've met Mason a few times before. Oh, yeah, he's been on a few videos as well. He's up there singing. He's bloody brilliant, right? He's singing all these fantastic, like, Sinatra songs and all this. And next thing, I get a tap on the shoulder. He's behind me. Tap on the shoulder. Stand up. Stand up, he's saying to me. I'm like, oh, my God, please don't tell me he's going to get me to sing. And everyone's laughing, and Carly's got a phone out, and Hannah Davis was there with a phone out thinking, oh, crap, I'm in front of a lot of people here, including Paddy McGuinness and you guys and loads of other people. Thinking, oh, he's going to get me to sing. So he stands up and he's singing My Way, I think it was. Frank Sinatra, My Way.
Me and Mrs. Jones.
Oh, me and Mrs. Jones. So he starts singing this line and he puts the mic to me. Now, I'm a born performer guy.
You are.
In every capacity of my life.
Two GCSEs at school, didn't you? PE and drama. So
I am born for stage. I'm not born for singing.
I've never seen you go so red.
Oh my. Because it was bloody awful. It was absolutely awful. What's really funny is sometimes if I'm singing to like my kids at night when it's like bedtime.
What's the go-to song at night?
I'm not singing it now.
Baby Shark.
There's a couple that I'll blast out. And honestly, in a moment when it's dark and I've got my eyes shut and I'm singing to my kids, I'm actually pretty decent at singing.
There's some level of talent there.
That talent eluded me at this moment in time and it was horrendous. It was like
I need to see this clip.
It was like I was strangling a cat.
Oh, it's great. I love it.
A couple of people later, Paddy McGuinness gets up.
His was just.
I bet he can sing, can he?
He just knocked out the park.
No, he just knocked out the park.
Just confident and just killed
it. He just absolutely
killed
it.
No, he didn't say anything. He just literally said, I can feel your penis in my butt.
Oh, did he not sing?
No!
I thought it's. Oh, why did I go with the penis in the back?
Well, you also got your penis, so.
Well,
that makes sense.
Unfortunately, he wasn't standing right behind you. It's actually to your side, so.
It's in my side. Yeah, so that was funny, but no, that was a good fun day.
Wow, every podcast we have now, we're talking about your penis in some capacity every single week.
Just won't get the views up.
anyway, so. We've got Cal on the podcast. Yes. You are, if I'm correct, a three-time winner on the Ladies European Tour. You've been on the European Tour for like 10 years now, is it, coming up to?
This is my 12.
12, so 12 years. So you're an OG on the Ladies European Tour.
I'm very old.
I didn't say old, OG. But with the podcast, we normally start off with literally the simple question of tell us how you got into golf, how you started golf, and let's just go on a journey to where we are today.
Well, where do I start? So... I grew up on a farm. I've got two older brothers. My older brother plays golf. I got into golf really through him. My dad was a silver medalist for wrestling. He kind of...
Silver medalist in the Olympics?
Yeah, Commonwealth Games.
Oh, wow. When, which one? When,
God, let's go back. Oops. Way back. 60s, 70s. Okay. My dad's 84 this month.
Oh, is he? Wow.
Yeah. So and I'm 20. When I say I'm old, I'm only 29, which I think is old, but it's I'm still under 30.
You're exactly. under 30.
Until then. So he just kind of, well, my mom and my dad, like, literally just as soon as we were born, like, into the gym, like, made us try every sport possible. Like, I was really good at gymnastics, swimming. Wallace was really good at, my oldest brother, who turned professional, really good at squash, wrestling as well. He was, like, British under 18 champion for wrestling as well. So we're just a really sporty family, but he chose golf. Then I kind of followed in his footsteps.
And how old were you at this point?
I think I was about 10 where I had to do... Well, I got... When I was 8, actually, I got my first handicap, which was 20.
Okay.
Wow.
Which seemed to be like a world record at
it's
the time.
It's pretty good, that, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
So I just kind of stood out a little bit at that point.
And did you, at 8-year-old, did you realize you were really good at golf at that time?
No, I just went to do what I had to do, and that was it.
Was it because you had, obviously, your older brothers, was it the fact that you weren't as good as Wallace yet, that you maybe didn't think you were that good, for example?
Possibly, yeah. Like, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be probably as good as I got so young and so quickly, because I had someone to look up to and constantly just... I always find anything you do, like, if you've got someone that's kind of pushing you or making you work harder or be better, it's always great to be around.
Absolutely.
So, yes...
So you're on a farm in Scotland. Yeah, where in Scotland?
Just 12 miles west of Gleneagles.
Okay. So it's like that Stirling area.
That is about 25 minutes from there.
So right in the middle of Scotland, basically.
Kind of. If you think of Stirling and Perth, it's like kind of in between.
Okay.
So Gleneagles, just a little bit west.
I get you. So you're on a farm, you're 8 year old, you've just got a 20 handicap, your brother's playing well, you're trying loads of different sports. You've mentioned gymnastics. I know you were really into gymnastics.
Yeah, I was a gymnast for Scotland from age 8 to 10 for under 12s.
Wow.
And then I think as well, it's just when you're kind of competing in too many different sports, you kind of have to decide which sport you want to excel at. Because there was not enough days in the week. So.
And your mum and dad must have been taxi drivers.
Literally, that's all they were.
Because again, if you're on a farm, I'm guessing it's quite rural. I'm guessing you're not close to things.
It was 25 minutes to gymnastics or 30 minutes to swimming.
That's crazy.
Golf. Like, my dad took me all over the UK. He literally drove everywhere.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm so thankful for all the opportunities that they gave me, and that's probably where I excelled quite young. And then from there, that was kind of my decision at about age 10. And then 12, you would say that I kind of came more into the media was when I won that British Masters with Sandy Lyle.
Yeah.
That was 2004, I think.
Well, one thing it says here that I don't know if this is on Wikipedia, so it might be incorrect, but it said that you became the youngest ladies club champion in Britain at the age of 11.
Oh, yeah.
Missed that all. Oops. So you were 11.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about being club champion.
This was at Dunblane U, was it?
Well, I was a member at three clubs. So Dunblane, Auchterarder, which is the course next door to Gleneagles, and Comrie, my local. And I won all three that year.
11?
Shut up.
And can you remember, like, what scores you were... Was it scratch, I take it, with being club champs, or...?
Well, you, like, I guess you do the qualify to the last whatever, and then it's match play.
Ah, okay.
Ah, right.
So, it was match play.
That's you fantastic. Won three in a year at the age of 11.
Yeah, that's why the women didn't like me.
Did you find that? Serious question. Did you find that... Wow. So you found that there was some kind of tension, or they didn't want a junior winning, or was it the fact they didn't want a junior girl winning, or what was it that they kind of didn't like? Someone new?
There's a few things where I'd love to show you, but I can't show you right now, where I did a couple of things on the TV for even helping as junior girls, where, like, my dad would drive me all the way to the south of Scotland and he can watch me play. He wouldn't let parents go on the golf course.
Right.
So I'm playing, like, Scottish under-18s at age 10.
Oh, my goodness. On your own?
On my own, and he can go and watch. So they wouldn't let parents go on the course. There's a public footpath. There's a few really great things I actually did at that age, which really changed a big insight, and it kind of helped grow, I think, Scottish golf for girls.
Like what? What did you do? Break down barriers?
Well, you'd have to watch it.
So you got what, a TV program working?
No, it was just, I've got it on my phone. On it was on a VCR that my mum's then sent me, because she's gone through the VCRs to put on DVD to then.
No way.
Then I filmed it. And it's crazy how you look back then and you see how much progress women's golf especially has changed.
So were you quite vocal in saying that this isn't right at that age?
I think that's where my dad was very vocal. Okay. He has no filter.
Do you know I was a wrestler? Do you know I was Olympic,
like,
silver wrestler?
Do you not know who you're talking to?
Was he a big fella? You didn't want to mess with him?
Well, he was a bouncer for the Beatles for 3 years.
What?
And he owned nightclubs.
He was a bouncer for the Beatles.
What the heck?
Oh my dad, God. Was not someone you'd mess with.
Wow, that's, like, incredible.
Yeah, he'd knock people out with his head. He had like a 21 one-inch neck.
Oh, my word.
Quite funny.
So he wasn't happy. His little Carly.
He always tells me his stories about the kind of nightclub days. Because he's from Aberdeen, but moved to Liverpool at like 17 for a job. And then just joined a gym. And that's where the wrestling all kind of started. But got a job working as a bouncer. And then when he owned a club called the Checkers Club, and then my mom came to work for him. She's 15 years younger, so that's how they met. And he used to say about the stories of, like, gangs. He wouldn't let gangs in. My parents are proper teetotal. Don't drink, smoke, swear. So he would always be the doorman on his club, and. So he would know who is coming in and coming out. Like, no. So then, like, he had a really nice car, but he'd always have a really, like, crappy car.
Right.
Like, we'd drive to the club because no one's going to look at that.
I get you.
Because people would actually...
If he got turned away, they'd go and smash his car up.
Yeah.
Smash in the nicest cars.
Oh, my goodness.
And then there was a time where he said he didn't let this gang come in. And they've waited for him outside the back. I mean, I don't know how realistic my dad likes to, you know, blasé.
Of course, you've got to say the fish that you caught.
I'm going with it.
Yeah, you've got to have a bit of a fishtail every now and again. Yeah. You've got to say the fish that you caught was a whopper. So go on, these guys were waiting for your dad.
So there's, like, the back alleyway, and he's like, I've gone out with the bins. And then these like, five, six guys are waiting for me. And he goes, right, well, the only thing I can do now is back myself into the corner and take one-on-one.
Oh, my God. And he did.
One-on-one. Because he's like, well, I know they all can't come at me at once.
Yeah, yeah, no one can get you back. Yeah. It's like Jackie Chan.
Literally.
It's like a Jackie Chan film.
I'm lost for words.
You're always supposed to say you're supposed to go for the biggest one first, aren't you?
I don't know. You're the man who knows this.
You're supposed to go for the biggest, hardest one first.
And then you get knocked out and you don't feel any pain after that.
That's why bringing a boy home was never easy.
I bet. So after all this rock and roll lifestyle of your dad, that's when he ended up getting a farm in Scotland, going back home.
But what? Yeah. We missed out the Beatles there. He was the bodyguard for the Beatles.
Yeah, for 3 years. And then they went to go to America, wanted him to go with him. Well, with them, but he turned them down because he was training for the Olympics.
Does he have any, like, mad memorabilia at home then of anything from the Beatles?
Well, still, like, he had his house broken into, and a lot of that got stolen, actually.
But he had stuff that was from, like, John Lennon or whatever.
Loads of that.
Oh, wow. My God. That must have been heartbreaking.
Sad for him, yeah. Big time.
That's crazy.
Oh, my word.
That was really cool.
And I then like I have a Down syndrome brother that won four gold medals for being a powerlifter.
I know. Well, dive into
to do with the golf day that you came to.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Because that helped fund it, didn't it?
Yeah. So tell us a bit more. In the Paralympics, he's Special Olympics. So there's two things. There's a mental disability and there's obviously a physical disability.
Just quick one. Just explain that just in case people missed it. So Is he still older brother?
I'm the youngest, so okay. He's the middle one.
Yeah, so he's called Paul.
Called Paul. He has Down syndrome. And he actually first went to the Special Olympics for swimming and got two bronze medals.
Right.
Then decided, I don't want to swim. I want to, be a powerlifter.
Oh, my goodness.
So then he's gone into powerlifting, and he's gone to the Special Olympics, which the first thing I did was actually do a skydive in Dubai to raise money.
You did that?
I did that. And that was back in 2014, I think. Because, again, there's no funding.
There's no grants.
So at least there was something that I could do to help towards even just their tracksuits, their uniforms.
Of course.
Or whatever kind of equipment they needed. And he went there and won four gold medals. Then I did another, then I started doing, I've done two golf days now. So that was to raise money for the LA World Games.
Yeah.
And he went and won a gold and a bronze.
That's so cool.
And then he decided, I'm retiring now. I want to be a coach. And then he said he wants to be a singer and wants me to be his. Can I be his band manager? And I'm like, oh my God, Paul. Or you can be a singer. I don't mind.
That's awesome. That's
I'm incredible. Like, I know someone that might be great for our band.
Cole Page. That's amazing. So I mean, you've really come from an incredibly sporty family.
Massively. And then Wallace, I mean, I can't not talk about my oldest brother. You know, he won one of the best amateurs throughout Scotland. He was Walker Cup.
Really?
Finished, I think it was third or fourth in the individual in the World Cup against Ricky Fowler. And then they won the World Championships. Wow. So beat America and all that. So yeah, and then he was British wrestling champion under 18s. He played squash for Scotland. Like, I mean, just...
This is mad.
We should have got the whole Booth family on.
I know. That could be a follow-up podcast. It
might be more than 2 hours. We talk about the whole family.
I mean, that is phenomenal. So your brother was doing well. He was obviously starting to, you know, win things. How many years older is he than you?
Wallace is 7. Paul is 2.5.
So 7, you know, you were 11, Wallace was 18, you're winning all these club championships at the age of 11, which is like record breaking. You had your big brother to look up to from a golf standpoint, Wallace. And then kind of when did Carly really realise that, yeah, you know what, golf is definitely for me. I want to go down this route of becoming a professional golfer.
I think it was probably around that time, like 11, 12. And then you know, I got kind of picked. I played in my first home internationals at age 12.
Yeah.
And then I went to America at 14.
At 14, you went to America?
Yeah. What? I won the Duke of York, the Scottish under 18s. Duke of York, he started school in London that he asked my dad if I would be willing to maybe go to, but I already accepted a scholarship to America.
Wow. And where did you go to in America?
I did 1 year at IMG Academies.
And where was that?
That was in Bradenton, Florida.
Okay.
And then I did a foreign exchange in Arizona. So those 2 years, but then I got picked, being in America, I got picked for the Kurtz Cup. So I was 15, and that was, as we were speaking about earlier, St. Andrews Old Course.
Wow.
Youngest ever to be picked for Great Britain Ireland at 15.
So and what was it like at 14? When you went to America, was that on your own?
God, I put on so much weight.
You didn't. At 14, you wouldn't have done.
I did. I just found a love for cookies.
Supersized everything over in the US.
Oh, it was a right shock.
So you're 14. You didn't go out with your parents?
No, I went on my own.
What the hell? And did you get obviously well looked after? Was it?
It was like a, I think there's two ways to look at it. It made me grow up really quickly.
I bet.
And also, yeah, I met so many people.
And was there any other superstar names in that class?
Yeah, Corda sisters.
Were they really?
Jessica. You know, I used, because it's a sport for five people. So, for example,
what do you mean? It's a sport for five people.
Sorry, it's a sport of five sports.
Five sports at a college, at a school.
At a school.
Okay.
So, sorry. Baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, and soccer.
Okay.
We know it's football.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I would see, like, Maria Sharapova training.
What?
At this time. Paula Creamer at the time.
Oh, my goodness.
Jessica Korda was kind of in the same time as me. And, yeah. There's a few others I could name.
Was this a all girls school or was the
no
boys mixed, there as well? Mixed. So any was there any big male pros that we might know of now?
Not that I can think of. I think a lot of people have come and gone through it.
I get you.
How long was this for then? If you were 14,
I only went there for a year, and then I went to Arizona. So going to Arizona, I did like a foreign exchange. So I just went to a public high school. Worked with a coach, and I'd play like quite a lot of the AJGA, which is known as the amateur tournaments there. And I was like playing a lot with like Cheyenne Woods.
Wow.
Like, so it was a great experience to kind of see that kind of level of the field of well, what's going on in America, as well as obviously playing in Europe.
Of course. Well, you obviously you're doing great at club level. You win club championships, so you've kind of passed that level. You've then doing really well at the home nation, things like that. You've then got to test yourself at what's the world offering, and you look at United States as that as probably being the benchmark to aim for, really. But in that time frame, like, we're not homesick. We're not like lonely.
Very, very.
It's a bizarre, like, did your parents come and visit you much? Did you go back home and visit much?
No, I went to four different high schools in 5 years.
So you were out there for 5 years, 14 to, how old were you when you left America then?
I left when I came back for Curtis Cup. So that was just before I turned 16.
Okay.
And then I finished my A-levels in Scotland. But then I got my tour card while I was still in school.
At what age?
At 17. So I was in my last year of school doing my A-levels. I thought, I'll go to Q School, because this is where I had the predicament. Do I go to like college for 4 years? Do I try and turn pro early? That was always something that I wasn't sure of, but I kind of was feeling I've had quite a lot of experience with the 2 years I had in America. It was almost like my thought was like, that's my college experience, even though it was not college. So I just kind of thought, well, I'm going to go to Q School, see where my game's at, or kind of have a feel of where or what I need to kind of do or improve. And I got my card straight away, and I was like, oh crap, I've got to go back to school.
Oh my God.
And like, I'd miss weeks at a time, so my, like, yeah, the school was really hard to complete. But I got my three A-levels, so that was good.
I bet it was hard for a number of reasons. Obviously, moving schools loads, missing your family, playing loads of golf, trying to get good at golf. Like, there's lots going on there.
Never really made a group of friends.
Yeah, that's quite hard. Like, when you look back at it now, I mean, at the time, did you enjoy it? Or did you find it kind of not particularly nice?
I think it's, you just know what you know at the time. Like, you don't know any different.
Yeah.
So you just know you're there to do something. I think as you get a little bit older, and then especially when I went to a more normal high school, it was kind of like, I always remember even younger, like coming home from gymnastics and you'd see like kids hanging out in a bus stop, and you'd be like, I quite envy those kids.
You never did that, really.
I actually envied them.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking, you know, all of that hard work has been worth it. And sometimes I think, I wish I worked harder.
Yeah.
When you, it's really well documented that, like, growing up, Tiger Woods was obsessed with Jack Nicklaus. He'd have, like, his age and his handicap written down. He'd always trying to beat him and beat him in the tournaments that he played in. Obviously, you said earlier on that you really, like, looked up to Annika. Did you, as a kind of youngster at 14, 15, were you thinking like that? Were you thinking, like, Annika was doing X at this age, I want to be doing that, or I want to be as good as she was at this age and beating what she did in these tournaments? Or were you just kind of quite chilled? Were you super competitive?
I was very competitive, but I never really thought about what anyone else was doing. So if I was going to a tournament, I just knew I wanted to win. Mm-hmm. That was it. That was my pure focus. And I think sometimes now it's like, I wish I thought less mm-hmm. about the outside things. Because mm-hmm. now as a pro, there's a lot more to it. You start to kind of think about it more. And it's like, you kind of wish you were your kind of amateur mindset sometimes, where you're a bit more fearless.
Well, as a pro, you're playing for your livelihood.
Yeah, and it's your living. It's how you make money.
It's how you get into the next tournament. It's where you rank for getting into certain events and things like that. So there's much more pressure compared to just playing your amateur game, where you know it was much more relaxed and easy, really. So 17, you turned professional.
And this is the thing, I think that was where there was a lot of pressure on me, like, to do well so quickly. And I think that's where it took me 2 years before I, like, won, to really find my feet. Because I think I put so much pressure on myself to please everyone. Mm. And I just knew I had the potential, but it's like, oh my God, I don't want to let anyone down.
Of course.
Now you've got sponsors. It's like, oh, like, I don't want to upset anyone. I can't play bad. So I think, you know, you get a bit overwhelmed, especially being young as well. So I think it was a lot of learning.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a golfer, you learn, you keep learning.
Of course.
Even at this age now.
So you took you 2 years to win your first event. Was that a Scottish Open, weren't it?
It was.
That's incredible. I bet it was an amazing feeling.
It was. Especially having my mom and my brother
were there watching.
Yeah, they were watching.
That's a good one to win as your first event. But then again, if this is...
I actually got an invite for that.
So you won off an invite?
Yeah.
Wow. And then you won the next month, am I right in thinking?
So I just had in my head, it was weird, because, you know, prior to winning the Scottish Open, I won an LET Access Series, which is the tour below, which I thought, I'll go just do some practice there. Well, not practice, but just play, because I hadn't been playing. And I won that. So I think that just gave me a little bit of a boost to see where my game was at, and also just give me a little bit of confidence to go into the Scottish. So I was playing well, won that. And then, weirdly enough, it's crazy how much the mind can make such an influence when you play golf. And I was like, I've got less than a month now to win again before I turn 20.
Is that so? That's what you
so
were thinking.
I was like, I want to do it one more time before I turn 20. And the final week before I turned 20 was the Swiss. So I actually ended up winning, but it was my first hole in one on tour, my first ever hole in one.
Was it really?
First time that I played with Laura Davis, which was someone I always wanted to
play
with.
Legend, yeah.
And I won in the fourth playoff hole with an eagle.
What?
Yeah, so it was a very, very memorable.
Dramatic.
And yeah, I was very tired after that one.
What's, you know, that first win, and obviously, you know, it's what now, it was 10 years ago, your first win.
2012, yeah.
That was four rounds as well, wasn't it? Because a lot of these other ones are three. Apparently on here.
Scottish was three, Switzerland was four.
Yeah.
And then the Czech I won, we've not got to, but that one, my recent one in 2019 was three.
So that first win, Scottish Open, like, is it almost, how do you describe how you feel after that win?
Do you know, it doesn't really sink in until, like...
later.
Yeah.
Almost when you look back at it, even now, as such.
Yeah, I think then it was... Do you know, the biggest thing for me was, like, that relief.
Yeah.
It was, like, this big weight off my shoulders. And then Swiss was just an enjoyable one.
Yeah, the cherry on the cake.
Pretty much that. And then the most emotional I've ever been as the 101 in Czech in 2019, because it took me 7 years to win again.
And you had my mate on the bag.
I had Andy Cart there.
Who was just recently... We actually never even spoke about this.
You know what? When he left, I was annoyed.
And he won't let it go.
We had him on the podcast. Our last guest was Carter.
Yeah, two episodes ago.
Somebody actually commented on the video at when it went live and said, I can't believe you didn't mention the win on the bag. And I thought, why did we not mention that?
Crazy.
Yeah, one hit wonder.
That's a good record. One hit wonder. Did one tournament, one win.
He did great. Honestly, we went there and just had fun. And I think that's the key. That was the key. I think sometimes you go in there with too much thought, too much pressure, too much, got to do this, got to do that. We just literally had fun.
Well, just on that then, because there's been a lot of talk, obviously, recently with like Rory and his caddy, Harry Diamond, being a good friend. Obviously, he's a great golfer. I think it's like a +5 handicap golfer, so he can play golf. But there's kind of, it feels at the moment, there's almost like two types of caddy on tour. There's the super kind of traditional caddy who's well known for being a caddy for 20 years, and there's people
who
like
whispers just the right thing in your ear when you need it,
yeah, who's like a trained caddy, and then the other kind feels like it's somebody's mate they've got on the bag, or the wife.
I mean, it's a bit like Andy with you, it's a bit like Liam Harrison with Dan Gavin, yeah, who we spoke about recently, like say Westwood's wife, who, and Westwood has had
his son as well, hasn't he? Yeah,
season since having that on the bag.
So do you think that they obviously do, but they both must work, like having an established caddy obviously works, which obviously like a Steve Williams has proved with Tiger for countless majors, but equally having a friend on that relaxes you can also really help.
I think every player is different and every player wants something different. I mean, that's the main thing. I know as a person that I just want someone there to have a laugh with who, you know, obviously knows your game. Mm-hmm. But it's more of when they pick you up when you're down and know what to say in that sense. So a friend is more something, because I know how, like, I'm the one hitting the golf shot. Like, everyone says, oh, you blame the caddy. But actually, it's you have to take responsibility for the shots you take. They're there to help you. They're not there to not... They're not going to, you know...
They can't make you do it,
not,
can they?
You gotta hit the
they're not
going
to purposely tell you advice that's wrong, because obviously it's a benefit for them if you play well. So, you know, unfortunately, we're just human. But I think what works, especially with, like... You see with Lee, like, he's just happy.
Yeah.
He's with the person he wants to be around. And, you know, he's just, it's uplifting. And, you know, he knows how to play golf.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's more of, like, the person that he wants to chat to, he wants to have a laugh with, who he wants next to him. Like, I remember also playing at Wentworth at a Gary Player Invitational, and I played with Jason Day. So his caddy... for a long time has been his coach, best friend, and you know, that's just, it works. Yeah. So,
well, you have like DJ has his brother, for example,
Justin,
but then Bryson probably wouldn't have his best mate on the bag. Bryson wants somebody who's
scientist
gonna give him,
almost.
He's going to give him, you know, you need to know these numbers almost.
Yeah,
almost.
Share the wind.
This is a proper job. Don't make me laugh. We're in a work mode.
His brain doesn't work.
It
works a little bit differently to most.
His brain works much more advanced than most people.
He's so. like streets ahead. Like, we can't keep up.
So 2019, that was your win, and that gave you an exemption then for LET for a period of time.
Yeah, it did for 2 years.
So you said 19 then. Do you mean the 12 one or do you mean the 19 one?
2019, yeah.
So the current one.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What did the first one get you then that we won in 2012? Did that give you?
Well, because I won twice that year, gave me 3-year exemption.
Do you always get to play in the Scottish Open because you've won it?
Good question. I hope so. If not, I hope I get an invite.
Well, you played in it this year, didn't you?
Yeah, I played this year. We played at Dunbarney. First time ever playing, that was an awesome
I've heard
golf
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's very amazing. New, but
I met the guy called Clive who designed the golf course recently in St. Andrews, and he was really proud of it. He said it's like one of the best patches of land he's ever been blessed to be able to use as a canvas for a golf course, really. It does look quite exceptional. How do you... And it, obviously, you've been pro now since 2000 and, if my math is right, 10?
Yeah, December 2009 when I got my card, yeah.
How do you stay motivated? How do you stay committed to it? What drives you?
Well, I mean, it's the love of the game, isn't it? As well as the ups and downs. I mean, it is a lifestyle of highs and lows. And, you know, it's the highs that keep going, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's times where I hate it, but there's something there that just makes you want to find that, you know, there's nothing more, or that feeling that it's what we work for every single day, is that feeling of that win. And nothing beats it.
And again, is it the win that absolutely keeps you committed, or is it a really strong season? So like a really, really good finish on like the Order of Merit or something.
It's a mixture of both, really. It's nice to play a season where you're just playing solid golf. I think that keeps your emotions more level, which is actually quite a nice thing. It's more relaxing in that sense. But, you know, the win's obviously a big thing.
Of course.
But it's nice to have a level and a win.
Yes.
that's what the idea is to play well consistently and have
a win. That's like Tony Finau this year.
Yeah, it is. The other thing as well, obviously, on the course, you've had great success, and you'll definitely have more success moving forward. We all know that. You were one of the first kind of real pioneers that really embraced social media, I feel.
I don't know, really, necessarily, but...
Like, did you always... When social media started to come out, was it a conscious effort to be on social media and to promote yourself? Or was it something that you got advised to do, or, you know, because I feel like I knew about you probably much more than I would do many other people, because I live on the world of social media.
Yeah, like, you know, even like when we first met.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Payback.
Well, it was at Trafford. It was probably about 2014 or 15. Well, what was strange was a year before that. So I was following you on Instagram, and a year before that, you were in Australia, and you were about a month behind me because I'd been in Australia, and you went to a driving range that I'd been at, weirdly, with artificial turf. You might not remember
and
a big tiger in the middle of it. And I remember, it's mad. Like, we almost run these kind of parallel lives. I knew you were kind of living in the Northwest at that time. You were playing golf. You were dead in social media. I just knew at some point our paths would collide, and it was at Trafford that time when you came down practicing. But I just feel like not many female golfers in as a whole, was really utilizing social media, but you really were. Like, your Instagram was definitely way above most people's.
I think at that point, I never really thought about it, but again, even since then, especially after meeting you with, like, doing the YouTube stuff, I realized actually how much, like, the world's going in this direction. Yeah. So, and then especially now, like, you know, with whatever, you know, particular sponsors that might be cropping up, or events, or everything is kind of social media involved.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think from that moment, I didn't realize until, like, the last kind of, you know, 5-6 years, where how much the world is enhancing in that direction.
I felt like you always gave a really good insight to your life through social media.
I think I maybe just did that naturally, because I never had anyone to tell me to do that.
You weren't advised to do that.
That's good that you had that foresight, because, like, I think we said this before off camera, like, obviously the best golfers in the world on both tours, men's or women's, are the best golfers in the world. But you need the ones that seem to get a following, whether it be on social media or, you know, actually on the golf course, the ones that you find yourself attached to, for whatever reason it could be, the personality, like Beef, obviously, Seve in the day, you know, these characters. And I think by, like you have done, by utilising social media, and even by, I'm looking here now, one of the first videos you and Rick did was May 2015. And I'm going to show you a picture and make you laugh at this. But by even doing that, whether you, obviously you at the time didn't really think much about it, other than it'll just be a bit of fun, that unlocked more eyeballs on you who may not watch much tour golf or much of the women's tour golf, that then became like fans of you. And you still have a following that we see a lot, like page, don't we?
I always just felt like straight away, that's funny, that is. We'll have to pull this up.
Put this on the screen for the video version. Look at Rick's hair there.
Oh, look how young you look.
That's a weird.
You don't like you've changed, Carly.
But you know what? I think it was just the banter. Like, we're just like ourselves. That's the funny thing. We don't try to be anything else. We just be ourselves.
But
like,
that's what was really good with you.
Me trying to put off Pete, like, doing a handstand.
Yeah, that was so funny. Like, but that's what was really good with you straight away. You were really well known. You had pedigree of winning. You had a following. But you also knew how to be yourself. And I think that sometimes it's quite difficult sometimes on a video, and I've done it with other people as well since. They almost put this guard up. Like you've just always been yourself, and I think that's why people love you so much, certainly on the videos. One of the other things I always remember, and I'd love to bring this up, but this is not something we've done. You obviously did also work off social media. Was it GQ magazine? What was the naked shoot?
Oh, that's ESPN.
I mean, that's incredible that you did that. Oh, talk us through this.
Okay, so that was, because, you know, I've always been into my fitness, and that year I'd obviously won twice, so I've obviously been kind of noticing this in a sense.
So this was back in like 2012 or something, yeah. Right?
So I've obviously, an inquiry's come in, and I've been obviously asked about this. This is when I was with the IMG management. And, you know, they've asked me if this is something I'd be, you know, keen to do or willing to do or interested in. It kind of took me by shock a little bit because I'm like, whoa. That's a bit like, I mean, like.
Didn't expect that.
It's like naked or just like. So, I mean, I think, like I said, I'm only 20 at the time. But then I've kind of done a bit of research. I'm like, oh my God, like, there's some of the most best athletes. Well,
Arnold Schwarzenegger had done it.
I did it with Gary, same year as Gary Player.
Yeah, there's Gary.
So we were the two, we were the two golfers that year.
Brooks has done it since, I believe.
Yep.
So describe this shoot for me.
Well,
is it as glamorous as it looks or not? Because you did it at, is it at New York Driving Range?
I did it in Chelsea Piers, New York, on January 4th. So it was freezing.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine I was like dressing gown, off on heaters. I think as well, the initial,
unveiling.
Unveiling was the hard part, but then it's kind of a small group of people, and then eventually it's just like whatever.
Everyone's seen you naked, so
I'm naked now. Yeah. So
done. So there's some Greg Norman pictures online that are quite revealing as well. He's done it, Greg Norman. He was
even
ripped.
Camila Vigigas.
I think he has. There's a bit of a trend though. It's all the guys that are shredded that have done it. I understand why.
And did you find that kind of a new audience found you? Obviously, that's ESPN, huge worldwide magazine. Like, did you find that people were now starting to follow you that maybe weren't golfers?
I don't know.
Don't know now. You can't measure it.
To be honest, I wouldn't know necessarily. I don't look at the numbers and figures. But I just feel that, you know, it's something I'm actually very humbled to be asked to be involved in. And again, seeing the athletes that have done it also, it's kind of be nice to be one of those that have. Also,
that's, there's some massive names.
What did your mum and dad think about it?
Well, that's the funny thing. So, during the interview of that, I met, like, I had, I think, about six, I've got six or seven tattoos, I can't remember. I had at least four at that point, and my dad never knew I had any tattoos. He was so against them.
Oh,
so, in my interview,
goodness.
It was like, surprise!
No way.
Because he was going to see them.
I feel like your big brother would have been, or your brothers would have been very protective as well.
Thing is, I remember getting one when I was really young. When I was like just turned 18 and I got one on my foot. And I had to wear socks all the time when I was home. And then one day I just forgot to come downstairs and put socks on. He's like, what's that on your foot? And I go, oh, it's just a sticker. Oh, thank God.
It's funny you mentioned that. Cause
I was like, I love how gullible he is. And then 2 years later, I'm like, yeah, it wasn't a sticker, Dad.
Well, Rick's
it's not come off yet.
You're booked in for your tattoo this weekend, aren't you?
I am, actually.
Rick's got a big Man United logo on his arm.
Big Man United logo.
But you're a Liverpool fan, aren't you?
Please do not tell me you're going to do that.
No, yeah, I'm going to get CR7 on the back.
Rick's become a huge... This is a bit of a running joke on the podcast that Rick's become a massive United fan
again
now. I like
to say footy.
Footy
yes,
fan.
Yes, massive Liverpool fan. And there, another thing with my dad, his number plate's 1KOP.
Cop, nice.
One cop.
That must be worth a few quid.
And his other one is W, because his name's Wallace, 007 for James Bond.
That's class. So,
no way.
I know. He's put them in the will.
I was going to say,
you would drive him in the car.
Wallace, aren't selling them.
Wallace can have, obviously, W007.
This is the problem. Me and Wallace have a fight now because he wants 1KOP. I'm like, but I can't have 007 because my name's not Wallace and your name's Wallace.
Yeah, get the cop one. Do you still follow it close in the football?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the last few weeks, but I would love to go to a few games this coming few months.
Because you're pally with Milner, aren't you, James Milner? Well, you've done stuff, you've done videos.
I know him.
I used to come to your events as he just...
Yeah, I went to his golf day a few times. I was possibly going to join his management group when he just started, but I used to go to his ball, which was pretty awesome.
I bet there was some famous people at that, right?
That's where I met Klopp.
Oh, wow.
And
look at you two Liverpool fans just chatting about Liverpool.
Rick could have been loving this
conversation.
I didn't
know you're a Liverpool fan.
I've actually, weirdly, I've got a Liverpool shirt on today. I've got the last season's goalie shirt on.
You knew you were coming.
Yeah, exactly.
We can be friends.
Yeah, Rick's out of it. Go away.
Rick, go away.
Who's the most famous person you've played golf with?
Oh, nice.
Ooh. Well, I didn't play around with. Well, actually, you know, the most famous week, I would say, would be when I was in China for this an event. So I'm hitting golf balls and very friendly and sociable that week with Morgan Freeman.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, that's a big name.
Sorry, that was just a name drop on the desk there.
That's a name drop.
You asked, you got.
It literally came from heaven. It just dropped.
My partner for that week was... Chris Evans, Captain America.
Oh, wow.
And the group in front was John Daly and Jessica Alba.
Oh, my goodness.
Who we all became friends with. And Greg Norman was like, we all had an absolute ball that week.
And also, you've got probably one of the most famous people on the planet.
Yeah.
Getting into your DMs and following you.
He messaged me first.
Do you know their story?
Is it the Trump one?
Well, we're going to come on to that in a minute.
Oh, is that a different one?
Someone
one.
Very cool.
The person who should be president of the United States.
Not The Rock.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, The Rock.
Explain the full story now, please.
How did that happen?
Well, I don't know, really.
Was this on Insta?
You saw the ESPN shoot.
One thing led to another. was this on Insta or on Twitter?
No, on Twitter.
Oh, come on, please get it. Have you got it on your phone still?
Yeah.
I'd have this framed.
Right, so I don't know.
In fact, was it not your cover for a bit that he followed you? So what happened? Did he just follow you out of the blue?
I always followed him.
I've got so many questions. Does he still follow you?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Do you check a lot to see if he still does?
We had some great conversations.
Look at the slide on the messages.
Is that on the DMs? You're scrolling up like that. They said it's going to be a YouTube
careful,
clip.
You get them all these on.
He followed me back, and that's what he sent me.
Hi, Carly. You look beautiful today.
No.
Shut up. Oh, so he sent you out the blue. He sent you a picture of him hitting golf balls.
This isn't even that long ago, 2017.
But what up, Carly? I think you'd be proud of the skills. It's The Rock hitting it. Oh, my word. So how did
look
he...
Look at this. Oh, my God. Oh, my...
So that was out the blue. How did he...
Well,
you met him?
You know, he kind of... I think I've done something, obviously, just like adding his like a workout video or something, and then I think he started that series
Didn't he do something about golf? Because I've Ballers, seen that picture before.
That was it. Ballers. Right. That series that came out. And I think I've posted about him, like, watching it, asking him, and he goes, something about something you'd appreciate as athletes, Carly.
That's so
and
cool.
Then I've done something with me, like, working out, and he goes, something like, you know the drill, mama.
And he wasn't following at this point, or was he?
Yeah, he was after this. And then I had...
Oh, my word.
There was this... an event in America where they did this, like, vote challenge. First time, I think it's only ever really been done, but it was between me and, I think, Blair O'Neill.
I remember this. Yeah, it's a bit weird, that, though, isn't it?
Like, I don't find that really...
Did you ever remember this?
Well, it's a bit bizarre.
They voted for a player to play in a tournament.
Yeah, literally. So it was between, I think, three of us or four of us.
It was just a popularity contest. Yeah. Right. But not in like
a space in the LPGA.
Yeah. Just an LPGA event. And Shamila got it, being Indian, just because obviously there's about a bazillion people in India. But I've had messages from, like, another tournament I played after, saying, you know, can you invite The Rock for the Pro-Am? And I'm like, well, because he said, can you vote for my homegirl, Carly?
Yeah, he shouted you out, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, my days.
That's so cool. And then you did randomly have Trump follow you.
Yes, he followed me for 5 days.
That's random.
I was his 46th follower.
That is random.
And have you met him before? Is that how it came about?
Yeah,
he's obviously a big golfer.
Have you met Trump?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say I know him, but I've met him and spoke very brief words.
So that was do you reckon it was a genuine follow? And then he just thought,
do you know what I think it was? It's to do with, I think he follows Gary Player, and I've been at quite a lot of the Gary Player Invitationals. I think it was something.
Ah, he's been to do with that.
Tying a bit closer, sorry, Carly.
Playing a lot of the Gary Player Invitationals, and he follows Gary Player, so I think maybe something seen there. But I played in the British Open at Turnberry 2015, and that's where I met him very briefly. Me going up the stairs, he's coming down the stairs.
And did he know who you were? Did he say, like,
hello.
Hi,
how are you?
I've watched you on Rick Shields' channel. I love the videos.
I'm not doing any more impressions.
Yeah, so
I got slighted last
week. Rick was doing an Irish impression.
Didn't go down well.
And no, it didn't go. And then I think if we tried to do American and it's Trump, I think that might be too much. Yeah. I get cancelled.
I can only do American and Scouse.
Go on, let's see you, Scouse.
That's murder. It's murder.
That's not that bad.
Because, I mean, there is... I mean, obviously, when you were growing up, like, you obviously inherited a little bit of a kind of an American...
Well, no, that the American was because of school.
From school, yeah.
So I wanted people to actually understand me.
Did you have to change your accent when you're over there?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you just adapt, don't you? When I go hang around with Scottish people, Scottish comes out.
Of course.
When I'm in Manchester, like, be like, you know what I mean? Like, all the Mancunian comes out. And then, obviously, with my family, like, my mom's like, ah, Maureen, Arlene, like, you know, she just, like, kind of just depends who you're around. I think
She's from Liverpool.
Yeah,
your mum
fluctuates my accent.
Do you have a question, or do you want to do a couple of?
I want to come to some questions in a minute. So obviously, still playing at the moment. Do you see what takes place in the future? Like, is there goals and ambitions and drive that you see Carly doing that's not in golf, let's say? Or if it is in golf, it's not playing golf?
That's a big question. I think that's a lot of what I've been kind of thinking of, to be honest. You know, I've just had a shoulder operation. So as well, I'm kind of thinking long term too. Whereas I still want to keep playing, but I also want to put myself in a place where, you know, when that day stops, I can just go into something else.
Yeah.
Do you think
it's still being golf?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. I think. I would be a bad coach, though.
You'd be a good presenter.
Well, I need to do some more media training. So that's probably something I'm going to do over the next kind of year.
I always think presenters that have an insight to what it's like on tour,
it's easy to talk about what you know.
And also, you'll know some of the golfers. You might get a little bit more out of them. Let's say they might say things that they'd say to you that they might not say to a non-golf, you know, commentate. I think that's why kind of Nick Doherty always does so well.
Really, yeah.
Iona Stephen and Incy, and, you know, I think because they've got that pedigree, I've been out here, done it with you girls or fellas or whatever, you know, you can, you're all right with me. You can chat to me. Do you know what I mean? I think you'd be great at that.
And that's a great thing about, you know, even playing the Evian Masters, the major I just played this year, I had Simon Dyson, you know, a former top 25 in the world on the back for the first time. His, you know, he's gone into the coaching side, but he's never caddied before. Yeah. And he's like, this is going to be such a great insight to be on the other side.
Of course.
And, you know, he's like, I want selfie with Dico. And really? I'm like, oh my God. Calm down.
I know, yeah.
Calm down, Simon.
What, is he coach at the, currently, Simon?
Yeah, he's based mainly at Montremal.
Yeah. But he's your coach?
Not necessarily, but, you know, it's, you know, potentially.
Do you have...
But from what he's... For of recent, it's more of like the insight. I love to chat to him because of, you know, it's not necessarily about the swing. It's about the mindset. Like, he's just got so much knowledge. And I think that's the thing. It's not always technique. It's the mindset. So when you know what you're doing, like, I know when I'm hitting badly, I kind of already know what I'm doing wrong.
He's more of a performance coach.
And I think that's more beneficial to especially the higher player.
Of course.
Well, the higher level of player, because...
You know how to hit a golf ball.
We all know how... Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean? You know how to hit it. You know how to manage a golf ball around the golf course. It's doing it in certain situations. It's doing it when you might not be feeling your best. It's doing it when, you know, you've had a bad start or whatever it may be.
And it's even like little insights of just, you know, something that he's learned.
Of course.
Which, like, something about, like, I've been struggling with, like, that 60 to 80 yard bunker shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, well, I learned this, someone, you know, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. You know, so it's just like these little things that it's not necessarily you don't know how to play it, but how do you have a variety or how can you make it easier for yourself?
Of course.
So it's like, yeah, it's been really insightful.
So you'll have a little bit more time off this year, obviously, with the shoulder.
Yeah, I withdrew from the second round of my last event. I'm going to take a few weeks off and I'm going to see where I'm at because it's just not 100% there yet. And I don't want to force an operation. No. And I want to make sure it's not a long-term problem.
Right thing to do, definitely. You hear about so much people coming back, don't they, too early. And it just does more damage than it's worth.
Got some questions.
We have a Facebook group, Carly, and for listeners that don't know, obviously on Facebook, it's just literally called The Rich Shields Golf Shows. If you want to join, go in a little search bar on Facebook, The Rich Shields Golf Shows, like 65,000 members now.
It's getting up there.
It's good. There's a chat about the podcast, chat about just general. We have a lot of people posting the first ever hole-in-one picks, but I love seeing it.
People seem to get a lot of hole-in-ones.
60,000 people. That's true. Like a one a day, statistically. What's the one, though? What's the odds? One in, I don't know.
I'm sure it's over 100,000. So, yeah, one in every couple of
and
days.
And then there's a lot of people, like, they post pictures of, like, the scorecard. Like, today I broke 100 for the first time or broke 90. And we love seeing that as well. Yeah, sometimes great. A little bit of thanks to Rick for watching the videos.
Only sometimes. That's if Guy accepts them ones.
Yeah, I have power, so I just decline. I don't want to give any more credit. But anyway, we said on there that you were coming on and you got a great reception. You'll be glad to know. Loads of people are excited to hear from you. But we had loads and loads of questions. I was going to only pick a few, and we've been going for over an hour already.
We have.
Time has flown. So I've just picked out some of the really good ones. This one's from Mark Thomas. It's a bit kind of standard, but I'm really keen to hear your... no offence, Mark. It's like something you ask a lot of times, but what's your dream four ball?
Oh, I think it kind of changes quite often. I remember getting asked this many, many years ago. But if I'm going to be completely honest, at this moment in time, it would be... The Rock, Gary Player, and Tiger Woods.
That's a good one. That'd be close to yours, about, wouldn't it, Rick? You wouldn't be far
Although
off
Although I
that.
Would quite like to play with Mark Wahlberg, too.
Yeah.
Could it be a five ball?
It could be a five ball.
I think I'd go Tiger, Will Smith, Rock.
Oh,
that's a good
one. Could it be a six ball?
You could have him on your bag.
Oh, yeah, I can have a caddy. And
Each one of the players
can have a caddy.
Yeah.
This one's a good one from Kevin Rands. He said, can you ask about her golf fitness program? I'm guessing he's obviously a follower on your Insta because you've done a lot on there about your fitness, but does she think it could help benefit amateurs as well as the pros?
Massively. big thing. You know, I'm part of an app which you should follow and subscribe, is Golf Watt. So it's about enhancing your fitness levels to make your golf game better. As an athlete growing up, like, I know, for example, I wouldn't be as good at golf if I didn't have such a good physical background with my gymnastics, hand-eye coordination, my, I think as well, people don't realize how much your physical fitness really, like, helps your mental strength, especially if you're out there for, like, 5-6 hours a day. And I know, like, if I'm physically fit, I'm less likely to get tired. And then that's when your game tends to drop. So if you're physically fit, I feel like that's only going to be positive in your in yourself as well.
So that's Golf, WAD.
Yes.
Was it AD? What? WOD.
WOD. WOD.
Workout of the day. It's like a CrossFit thing. A good question from Matthew Baldwin. I don't think it's the golfer Matthew Baldwin, but best way to get my young daughter into golf? Do you have any tips from, like, a, don't know, from more, because obviously you've given some good advice, Rick, when your daughters, but maybe from more, obviously, a female's perspective and the fact you were a junior golfer, what would you say?
I mean, I don't know where he's based necessarily, but I think just starting in maybe grip sessions, like younger grip sessions. I mean, not necessarily going out on the golf course, but going on, like, maybe a pitch and putt or just to the driving range, just get a feel. I think that's the best way to just kind of start and then see where you go from there.
I've started to see more, and I think I always used to kind of almost turn my nose up to it a little bit, and I'm wrong and I'm happy to say it. I just think crazy golf and like mini golf plays such an important part for getting kids into golf.
Well, did I tell you I went to pitch and putt last week? I don't think I said on the flat. So I went last week, me and my wife went to St. Anne's, you know, the little seaside town.
Yeah.
And there's like an actual pitch and putt at the beach, but it's like quite good. There was some holes like 30 yards. There was some like 100 yards. And we went and had a little game. And I actually genuinely, hand on heart, enjoyed it as much as I would enjoy playing proper golf, because it was still like I said, decent little holes. There was not like loads of pressure. We weren't playing the proper rules, and it's just really fun. And you think, like, when you grow up, which I did, which I'm grateful for, like playing golf, the only negative to that is you see it very much as you have to play 18 holes, you have to play properly, you can't move your ball up on a bad lie, because you want to play it kind of by the book. But equally, there's so many more ways of playing golf, certainly for youngsters, that can just be fun, that don't have to be that kind of linear 1-18.
Yeah, I honestly think mini golf or crazy golf plays such a part, just as an introduction. And then it's driving ranges, it's group classes, as you say, Carly. It's something that just, they understand, the kid knows, that's a golf ball, that's a golf club, that's a golf hole. Whatever combination happens after that doesn't really matter.
And also, I think, like, it doesn't have to be 18 holes. I think, especially that age, it should be, like, 5-hole competitions. Because, do you know what? 18 holes takes a long time. It's a long period of time. So it's got to be short. And you know, because I think, like, at that age, you kind of, you know, your mind goes and you lose interest quite quickly. So it's got to be fun and quick.
Well, you so wouldn't,
you mean Rick's quick six. Rick's,
yeah. Well, yeah. We joke, but you wouldn't put, for the moment. You wouldn't give a group of under 7 footballers full size pitch in 90 minutes, would you?
No.
They just wouldn't last. They wouldn't enjoy it. They have smaller goals, smaller teams. Like, everything's smaller in it. And it's more kind of palatable.
Yeah.
Quick one before I come on to the last question from the audience. We're a similar age and probably been playing golfer similar amount of time, although you've obviously done a hell of a lot more than I ever have. Although I have got over there, if you look at the little trophy behind you, the Tiger Woods bobblehead, that trophy on the left is when I won the Hurlston Hall Junior Open putting comp in 2002.
So there.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
The same year you were won 3 club champions.
Yeah, exactly. Literally was the same year.
Do you say this on every podcast?
Yeah, and I've also got my 2004 Junior Order of Merit as well there. So
he likes to flex.
It's because there's been comments before saying, well, what are guys' credentials? You know, Rick's a PGA pro with nearly 2 million subscribers. Well, there's my fucking credentials.
So I have that.
But anyway... we've been playing golf for a similar amount of time. When I was growing up, I was quite nervous that golf wasn't cool. And a story I've probably told before on the podcast, I remember getting a lift home from the golf club, mum and dad, getting my clubs out of the car, and the public bus would go past. They might have youngsters on who've been playing out or whatever. And I would panic that they're going to see me with my set of golf clubs. I really would. And I'd like run in the house or almost hide a little bit because I didn't want to get ridiculed in school, which sounds mad to even say now. But I do think golf has changed massively. Do you see that as well? I mean, I don't know how you felt as a young girl playing golf, but do you feel like golf has become cool and it's more kind of accepted as well?
Massively. like, I've seen a big change since I was a kid. Like, I was, you know, I didn't really have time for friends, to be honest, but I didn't think it was cool, but I think that was the pushing, or, you know, the support of obviously having my older brother play, and my family, and, you know, having the farm at home. So, like, I didn't really have to go anywhere. I could come home and practice. Mm. No one has to see me.
Have you got golf holes at you at the farm?
Yeah, we have like 15.
15 holes?
Yeah.
Oh my word.
So you got a golf course, basically.
I mean, you can see all the holes in, like, from the first tee.
Like, how long are they?
Like, some are like over 300, well, two are like 350 yards.
No.
But you can go from tee to different greens, so some can be really short or really long.
Who maintains it?
Well, it's a little bit out of use now because I haven't lived there for ages and my dad's kind of struggling a bit. But he used to cut grass every day. That's all he did.
Oh, my. That's unreal.
15 holes at home.
Yeah.
No wonder you were a tour pro. Exactly. That's why I never was. That's awesome. And the last question I've got is a really good one again from Stuart Smith. He said, what do you think about the current crop of young golfers coming through? Some of the young women that played at the Curtis Cup were outstanding, he said.
Well, I mean, I don't, like, being one of the younger ones when I turned pro, and I was saying this to you earlier, I never really kind of looked behind me. Mm-hmm. But now, like, I've seen, like, obviously getting involved, especially with, like, disability golf, the European Disability Golf Association, as well as Scottish Golf. I've seen a lot, and then also seen how we want to make this easier and more accessible to youngsters. But then I've seen, like, Duncan.
Louise Duncan, you mentioned before.
Like, how amazing she played in the British Open.
Oh, phenomenal.
She's Scottish as well, isn't she? Yeah.
And I was like, geez, you know what? That just made my day to see that there are, like, whatever we're trying to achieve and see, like, make a trend for girls younger than us to start making golf their way of life and what they want to do and their career, that this is, we're seeing it now, which is good.
If you had to sit down with Louise now, she's just kind of starting her career, what kind of advice would you give her?
You know, I actually, I know kind of what I'd say, which would be the same thing I actually said. Charlie Hall sat me down once when she just started. We were in Turkey. She asked me that kind of similar question, like, how'd you win?
Yeah.
And I mean, like, I mean, come on, she just played Solheim and she's won many times. She's been out and, like, I mean, she's an absolute star. But it's funny, like, in some ways, like, you don't really, you know, and you have an answer, but everyone's very different.
Of course.
I just know for a fact, you just got to keep enjoying it.
Yeah.
That's the main fact. And also, like, use your time wisely.
Yeah.
And also, like, listen to whatever advice that you hear, what you get given, and then use it to your advantage.
Yep.
You know, you don't have to take everyone's advice, but figure out what's best for you.
Would you advise her to pursue a social media?
I think that's part of that is, it's a good thing to be more known, and I'm sure that's the way a lot of sponsors kind of want that route of, you know, using their, you know, image,
yep,
and whatever that is to promote what they want. But you've got to think of yourself first and make sure you're your priority.
Yep.
And make sure you know what, it's more even the team around you.
Yeah.
Make sure you have the right team around you.
That's a good point. And that's the thing with social media. Like, I would probably, without question, go, oh, yeah, absolutely do social media. Like, you'd be daft not to.
But then I could also say, don't bother with it.
That's what I mean.
Let your team do it and focus on your golf.
That's
you don't
what
hear
I mean. But I live in that bubble again where if you're out on tour all the time and you're playing in tournaments, have you got time to be distracted by social media? Like, do you actually need it? Or, like I say, can your management look after
it? The thing is, though, we live in a world in what we do and where number, like, followers matter, likes matter, views matter. It's what we do. If you're a golfer, you might be a bit interested, but Where you finish last week matters. Yeah. How you're improving your putting matters. Like, how you finish this week matters.
You can see it as almost like a broader business strategy on the side that just plugs in, that you can go, oh, I did this in an event. Oh, my Instagram also made me a few thousand this week.
It's like, if you ever look now, Patrick Cantlay won last week, obviously. How much did he win? Was it $15 million?
Something like that.
And I'm using this term loosely, but he's only got, how many followers?
Well, I'm going to guess. I reckon not many more over 100,000.
He's got 75,000. So, but is he going to give a toss?
It's more of your mental strength too, because whatever positivity comes with social media, there's so much negativity. Sure. So if you can be able to weigh up both and not care so much of the negative, then go for it with the social media. But if that's going to make you feel depressed, or it's going to start to, oh my God, have I lost followers, or oh, I've not played well this week, or people are going
to... Some troll said something nasty
to
me.
People are going to say something nasty to me because I didn't play well this week. I mean, if that's your thought process, not healthy.
You don't need it. No.
And you can even on tour play, you can almost get, oh, you walked past me and didn't give me a signature today. I hate you now. Yeah. You know, even things that are almost like...
Yeah, just, I wouldn't bother.
It almost get you so like... I don't know. You'd go to the next day and have a pitch with everybody because you'd be thinking, oh, God, I don't want to upset anybody.
I could imagine.
Or there'll be a keyboard warrior like this, and then when they see you, can I have a picture? Big fan.
Oh, yeah.
If Rick woke up tomorrow and suddenly got a European tour card and you're playing on the European tour on a Sunday.
I'll caddy for you.
Carly's in the bag. You're walking down the 18th, you're out to win. He's thinking, oh, what's my Instagram caption going to be?
Well, I would. I'd be thinking.
Next thing he shanks it, he loses.
I need to get a banger Instagram if we're going to win this.
It's okay, I'll help you.
Well, Carly, you've been a pleasure. I think we've covered pretty much everything.
I think that was excellent. I think there's definitely a part two in the future, though. We've got so much more I think we can go over and how you're getting on with your golf and stuff. But for today,
it'd be good
that
to pick
sick.
It back up next year when you're fully fit and fighting again and back out on tour and killing it. We want to see more Carly Booth wins, and I'm sure you do too.
I certainly do.
Everybody, make sure you do follow Carly. Thanks for listening to episode number 96, and we'll see you next week.
5-star review on Apple would always be nice as well.
If you want to.
Don't have to.
I think Carly deserves it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for watching. Thanks for Carly for coming in.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Kai.
Ta.
Thanks, Rick. See you soon.
Bye.
Thanks, Matt.
Very good.
Thanks, Matt.
's interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.